Chucho Valdez and the Afro-Cuban Messengers with New Orleans. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrace Lead. It's Monday, May the 20th, and President Obama goes homie again. President Obama apparently thought it was irrelevant that Morehouse College has been battling educational apartheid since 1867, shaping the minds of African American men in particular and molding them into stalwart and exemplary leaders. Or maybe he really just didn't have anything new to say, but just the same, he was the commencement speaker at Morehouse yesterday, addressing the graduating class, about 500 of them, the graduating class of 2013. They sat through a steady rain, complete with thunder and lightning, to hear him go homey with them, with standard themes that appear when the president addresses African Americans, especially men. We'll take a listen of that because it's very revealing. And then we'll come back and I'll want to know whether you picked up on the cues that the president was giving in his speech, for which, of course, he was conferred an honorary Doctor of Laws degree and became a Morehouse man, which is a great honor. You know, we talked about the fact that in this time that the president finds himself in, he will need to reconnect with a community that he has long ignored and for which there's little to show for 5 years of being in office. But it is very instructive to actually listen to what he conveys when he speaks to his community, his constituency. I give you now the President of the United States going homey at Morehouse College yesterday.
Now, graduates, I am humbled to stand here with all of you as an honorary Morehouse man. I finally made it. And as I do, I am mindful of an old saying. You can always tell a Morehouse man, but you can't tell him much. And that makes my task a little more difficult, I suppose. But I think it also reflects the sense of pride that's always been part of this school's tradition. Benjamin Mays, who served as the president of Morehouse for almost 30 years, understood that tradition better than anybody. He said, and I quote, "It will not be sufficient for Morehouse College, for any college for that matter, to produce clever graduates, but rather honest men, men who can be trusted in public and private life, men who are sensitive to the wrongs, the sufferings, and the injustices of society, and who are willing to accept responsibility for correcting those ills." It was that mission, not just to educate men, but to cultivate good men, strong men, upright men, that brought community leaders together just 2 years after the end of the Civil War. They assembled a list of 37 men, free blacks and freed slaves, who would make up the first prospective class of what later became Morehouse College. Most of those first students had a desire to become teachers and preachers, to better themselves so they could help others do the same. A century and a half later, times have changed. But the Morehouse mystique still endures. Some of you probably came here from communities where everybody looked like you. Others may have come here in search of a community. And I suspect that some of you probably felt a little bit of culture shock the first time you came together as a class in King's Chapel. All of a sudden, you weren't the only high school sports captain. You weren't the only student council president. You were suddenly in a group of high achievers. And that meant you were expected to do something more. And that's the unique sense of purpose that this place has always infused. The conviction that this is a training ground not only for individual success, but for leadership that can change the world. Dr. King was just 15 years old when he enrolled here at Morehouse. He was an unknown, undersized, unassuming young freshman who lived at home with his parents. I think it's fair to say he wasn't the coolest kid on campus. For the suits he wore, his classmates called him Tweed. But his education at Morehouse helped to forge the intellect, the discipline, the compassion, the soul force that would transform America. It was here that he was introduced to the writings of Gandhi and Thoreau and the theory of civil disobedience. It was here that professors encouraged him to look past the world as it was and fight for the world as it should be. And it was here at Morehouse, as Dr. King later wrote, where I realized that nobody was afraid, not even of some bad weather. I added on that part. I know it's wet out there. But Dr. Wilson told me y'all had a choice and decided to do it out here anyway. That's a Morehouse man talking. Now think about it. For black men in the 40s and the 50s, the threat of violence, the constant humiliations, large and small, the uncertainty that you could support a family, the gnawing doubts born of a Jim Crow culture that told you every day that somehow you were inferior, the temptation to shrink from the world, to accept your place, to avoid risks, to be afraid, that temptation was necessarily strong. And yet here, under the tutelage of men like Dr. Mays, young Martin learned to be unafraid. And he, in turn, taught others to be unafraid. And over time, he taught a nation to be unafraid. And over the last 50 years, thanks to the moral force of Dr. King and a Moses generation that overcame their fear and their cynicism and their despair, barriers have come tumbling down. And new doors of opportunity have swung open. And laws and hearts and minds have been changed to the point where someone who looks just like you can somehow come to serve as president of these United States of America. So the history we share should give you hope. The future we share should give you hope. You're graduating into an improving job market. You're living in a time when advances in technology and communication put the world at your fingertips. Your generation is uniquely poised for success unlike any generation of African Americans that came before. But that doesn't mean we don't have work. Because if we're honest with ourselves, we know that too few of our brothers have the opportunities that you've had here at Morehouse. In troubled neighborhoods all across this country, many of them heavily African American, too few of our citizens have role models to guide them. Communities just a couple of miles from my house in Chicago, communities just a couple of miles from here, there are places where jobs are still too scarce and wages are still too low, where schools are underfunded and violence is pervasive, where too many of our young men spend their youth not behind a desk in a classroom, but hanging out on the streets or brooding behind a jail cell. My job as president is to advocate for policies that generate more opportunity for everybody, policies that strengthen the middle class and give more people the chance to climb their way into the middle class, policies that create more good jobs and reduce poverty and educate more children and give more families the security of health care and protect more of our children from the horrors of gun violence. That's my job. Those are matters of public policy, and it is important for all of us, black, white, and brown, to advocate for an America where everybody's got a fair shot in life, not just some, not just a few. But along with collective responsibilities, we have individual responsibilities. There are some things as black men we can only do for ourselves. There are some things as Morehouse men that you are obliged to do for those still left behind. As Morehouse men, you now wield something even more powerful than the diploma you're about to collect, and that's the power of your example. So what I ask of you today is the same thing I ask of every graduating class I address. Use that power for something larger than yourself. Live up to President Mays' challenge. Be sensitive to the wrongs, the sufferings, and the injustices of society, and be willing to accept responsibility for correcting those ills. I know that some of you came to Morehouse from communities where life was about keeping your head down and looking out for yourself. Maybe you feel like you escaped, and now you can take your degree and get that fancy job and the nice house and the nice car and never look back. And don't get me wrong, with all those student loans you've had to take out, I know you've got to earn some money. With the doors open to you that your parents and grandparents could not even imagine, no one expects you to take a vow of poverty. But I will say it betrays a poverty of ambition if all you think about is what goods you can buy instead of what good you can do. So yes, go get that law degree, but if you do, ask yourself if the only option is to defend the rich and the powerful, or if you can also find some time to defend the powerless. Sure, go get your MBA or start that business. We need black businesses out there, but ask yourselves what broader purpose your business might serve in putting people back to work or transforming a neighborhood. The most successful CEOs I know didn't start out intent just on making money. Rather, they had a vision of how their product or service would change things, and the money followed. Some of you may be headed to medical school to become doctors, but make sure you heal folks in underserved communities who really need it too. For generations, certain groups in this country, especially African Americans, have been desperate in need of access to quality, affordable health care. And as a society, we're finally beginning to change that. Those of you who are under age 26 already have the option to stay on your parents' health care plan. But all of you are heading into an economy where many young people expect not only to have multiple jobs, but multiple careers. So starting October 1st, because of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, you'll be able to shop for a quality, affordable plan that's yours and travels with you, a plan that will ensure not only your health, but your dreams if you are sick or go get an accident. But we're going to need some doctors to make sure it works too. We've got to make sure everybody has good health in this country. It's not just good for you, it's good for this country. So you're going to have to spread the word to your fellow young people. Which brings me to the second point. Just as Morehouse has taught you to expect more of yourselves, inspire those who look up to you to expect more of themselves. We know that too many young men in our community continue to make bad choices. And I have to say, growing up, I made quite a few myself. Sometimes I wrote off my own failings as just another example of the world trying to keep a black man down. I had a tendency sometimes to make excuses for me not doing the right thing. But one of the things that all of you have learned over the last 4 years is there's no longer any room for excuses. I understand there's a common fraternity creed here at Morehouse, Excuses are tools of the incompetent used to build bridges to nowhere and monuments of nothingness. Well, we've got no time for excuses. Not because the bitter legacy of slavery and segregation have vanished entirely, they have not. Not because racism and discrimination no longer exist, we know those are still out there. It's just that in today's hyper-connected, hyper-competitive world with millions of young people from China and India and Brazil, many of whom started with a whole lot less than all of you did, all of them entering the global workforce alongside you, nobody is going to give you anything that you have not earned. Nobody cares how tough your upbringing was. Nobody cares if you suffered some discrimination. And moreover, you have to remember that whatever you've gone through, it pales in comparison to the hardships previous generations endured, and they overcame them, and if they overcame them, you can overcome them too. You now hail from a lineage and legacy of immeasurably strong men, men who bore tremendous burdens and still laid the stones for the path on which we now walk. You wear the mantle of Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington and Ralph Bunche and Langston Hughes and George Washington Carver and Ralph Abernathy and Thurgood Marshall and, yes, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. These men were many things to many people, and they knew full well the role that racism played in their lives. But when it came to their own accomplishments and sense of purpose, they had no time for excuses. Every one of you have a grandma or an uncle or a parent who's told you that at some point in life, as an African American, you have to work twice as hard as anyone else if you want to get by. I think President Mays put it even better. He said, whatever you do, strive to do it so well that no man living and no man dead and no man yet to be born can do it any better. And I promise you what was needed in Dr. May's time, that spirit of excellence and hard work and dedication and no excuses, is needed now more than ever. If you think you can just get over in this economy just because you have a Morehouse degree, you're in for a rude awakening. But if you stay hungry, if you keep hustling, if you keep on your grind and get other folks to do the same, nobody can stop you. And when I talk about pursuing excellence and setting an example, I'm not just talking about in your professional life. One of today's graduates, Frederick Anderson. Where's Frederick? Frederick, right here. I know it's raining, but I'm going to tell about Frederick. Frederick started his college career in Ohio only to find out that his high school sweetheart back in Georgia was pregnant. So he came back and enrolled in Morehouse to be closer to her. Pretty soon, helping raise a newborn and working night shifts became too much. So he started taking business classes at a technical college instead, doing everything from delivering newspapers to buffing hospital floors to support his family. And then he enrolled at Morehouse a second time. But even with a job, he couldn't keep up with the cost of tuition. So after getting his degree from that technical school, this father of three decided to come back to Morehouse for a third time. As Frederick says, God has a plan for my life, and he's not done with me yet. And today Frederick is a family man, and a working man, and a Morehouse man, and that's what I'm asking all of you to do. Keep setting an example for what it means to be a man. Best husband to your wife or your boyfriend or your partner. Be the best father you can be to your children, because nothing's more important. I was raised by a heroic single mom wonderful grandparents, made incredible sacrifices for me. And I know there are moms and grandparents here today who did the same thing for all of you. But I sure wish I had had a father who was not only present, but involved. Didn't know my dad. And so my whole life, I've tried to be for Michelle and my girls what my father was not for my mother and me. I want to break that cycle where a father's not at home, where a father's not helping to raise that son or daughter. I want to be a better father, a better husband, a better man. It's hard work that demands your constant attention and frequent sacrifice. And I promise you, Michelle will tell you I'm not perfect. She's got a long list of my imperfections. Even now, I'm still practicing, I'm still learning, still getting corrected in terms of how to be a fine husband and a good father. But I will tell you this, everything else is unfulfilled if we fail at family, if we fail at that responsibility. I know that when I am on my deathbed someday, I will not be thinking about any particular legislation I pass. I will not be thinking about a policy I promoted. I will not be thinking about the speech I gave. I will not be thinking about the Nobel Prize I received. I will be thinking about that walk I took with my daughters. I'll be thinking about a lazy afternoon with my wife. I'll be thinking about sitting around the dinner table and seeing them happy and healthy and knowing that they were loved. And I'll be thinking about whether I did right by all of them. So be a good role model. Set a good example for that young brother coming up. If you know somebody who's not on point, go back and bring that brother along. Those who've been left behind, who haven't had the same opportunities as we have, they need to hear from you. You've got to be engaged on the barber shop, on the basketball court, at church. Spend time and energy and presence to give people opportunities and a chance. Pull them up. Expose them. Support their dreams. Don't put them down. We've got to teach them just like what we have to learn, what it means to be a man, to serve your city like Maynard Jackson, to shape the culture like Spike Lee, to be like Chester Davenport, one of the first people to integrate the University of Georgia Law School. When he got there, nobody would sit next to him in class, but Chester didn't mind. Later on, he said it was the right thing for me to do. Someone needed to be the first. And today, Chester is here celebrating his 50th reunion. Where is Chester Davenport? He's here. So if you've had role models, fathers, brothers like that, thank them today. And if you haven't, commit yourself to being that man for somebody else. And finally, as you do these things, do them not just for yourself, but don't even do them just for the African-American community. I want you to set your sights higher. You know, at the turn of the last century, W.E.B. Du Bois spoke about the talented 10, a class of highly educated, socially conscious leaders in the black community. But it's not just the African-American community that needs you. The country needs you. The world needs you. As Morehouse men, many of you know what it's like to be an outsider, know what it's like to be marginalized, know what it's like to feel the sting of discrimination. And that's an experience that a lot of Americans share. Hispanic Americans know that feeling when somebody asks them where they come from or tells them to go back. Gay and lesbian Americans feel it when a stranger passes judgment on their parenting skills or the love that they share. Muslim Americans feel it when they're stared at with suspicion because of their faith. Any woman who knows the injustice of earning less pay for doing the same work, she knows what it's like to be on the outside looking in. So your experiences give you special insight that today's leaders need. If you tap into that experience, it should endow you with empathy. The understanding of what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes, to see through their eyes, to know what it's like when you're not born on third base, thinking you hit a triple. It should give you the ability to connect. It should give you a sense of compassion and what it means to overcome barriers. And I will tell you, class of 2013, whatever success I have achieved, whatever positions of leadership I have held, have depended less on Ivy League degrees or SAT scores or GPAs, and have instead been due to that sense of connection and empathy, the special obligation I felt as a black man like you to help those who need it most, people who didn't have the opportunities that I had, because there but for the grace of God go I. I might have been in their shoes. I might have been in prison. I might have been unemployed. I might not have been able to support a family. And that motivates me. So it's up to you to widen your circle of concern, to care about justice for everybody, white, black, and brown. Everybody, not just in your own community, but all across this country and around the world. To make sure everyone has a voice and everybody gets the seat at the table. That everybody, no matter what you look like or where you come from, what your last name is, where, it doesn't matter. Everybody gets a chance to walk through those doors of opportunity if they are willing to work hard enough. When Leland Shelton was 4 years old, where's Leland? Stand up, Leland. When Leland Shelton was 4 years old, social services took him away from his mama, put him in the care of his grandparents. By age 14, he was in the foster care system. 3 years after that, Leland enrolled in Morehouse. And today he is graduating Phi Beta Kappa on his way to Harvard Law School. But he's not stopping there. As a member of the National Foster Care Youth and Alumni Policy Council, he plans to use his law degree to make sure kids like him don't fall through the cracks. And it won't matter whether they're black kids or brown kids or white kids or Native American kids, because he'll understand what they're going through. And he'll be fighting for them. He'll be in their corner. That's leadership. That's a Morehouse man right there. That's what we've come to expect from you, Morehouse, a legacy of leaders, not just in our black community, but for the entire American community. To recognize the burdens you carry with you, but to resist the temptation to use them as excuses. To transform the way we think about manhood and set higher standards for ourselves and for others. To be successful, but also to understand that each of us has responsibilities, not just to ourselves, but to one another and to future generations. Men who refuse to be afraid. Men who refuse to be afraid. Members of the class of 2013, you are heirs to a great legacy. You have within you that same courage and that same strength, the same resolve as the men who came before you. That's what being a Morehouse man is all about. That's what being an American is all about. Success may not come quickly or easily, but if you strive to do what's right, if you work harder and dream bigger, if you set an example in your own lives and do your part to help meet the challenges of our times, then I'm confident that together we will continue the never-ending task of perfecting our union. Congratulations, class of 2013. God bless you. God bless Morehouse, and God bless the United States of America.
Well, 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 well. So that was the president yesterday, and appropriately, you heard the thunder and lightning, literally, was characteristic throughout the speech. Now comes your homework. And we had our listening ears on, as my mother would say. Your listening ears. I need your listening ears. What did your listening ears tell you? You'll tell me that at 888-874-4888 right after these very brief messages about great programming right here at PRN.FM. listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We just listened to a speech, a commencement address at Morehouse College, delivered by President Obama yesterday. And the question now before you is, what did you hear? John from Brooklyn, what did you hear?
Hello.
Yeah, hello, John.
Yeah, I think he's trying to say about being responsible, taking responsibility, and I think that's pretty much what the message is. It's people have to take responsibility for what's going on. You know, because there's a lot going on. And can I expand the topic a little bit?
Well, we're staying on point with as long as it relates to what we just heard.
Yeah, actually, it does. You know, because you actually in our previous callbacks, you were talking about quantum physics, and this actually has a little bit relationship. Well, it has a little bit of relationship to the topic at hand, because quantum physics says that there's only one consciousness. Everybody has the same consciousness. That means.
Okay, John, you're a little far afield.
Yeah, so, but I'm relating it back to responsibility.
But you have to do that quickly.
Yeah, well, the thing is, because everything is one consciousness, we're all responsible for everything that's going on, okay? He's tangentially talking about responsibility, and I think a lot of this is that people are responsible for everything that's going on, and people are not even accepting the responsibility. People are overwhelmed by all these issues that are coming up, and they don't know what to do. It's a matter of getting together. It's sort of like
I got the gist of where you're going. Thanks so much for your contribution, George from New Jersey. What did you hear?
I heard. You was right on target last week when you said that he was going to turn into a brother. And that's exactly what he did. He's trying to relate and saying, hey, I'm one of you.
I am you. I'm off you.
Yes, so that's what I'm hearing.
But, you know, at a different level, just to hinge on to what John from Brooklyn just said, this is what is so offensive. Now, it may be the reason that he spoke about it is probably because he discovered it for the first time. But these are lessons that that this college, Morehouse, has been teaching since 1867.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It might be new to him.
Absolutely. But being that he's in this, controversial issues going on with him right now, and I think he feels the need to reach back and relate more to his base.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's a start for him, and I believe you're going to see him in more venues related to his base. In matter of fact, last week I've seen him at elementary school with a bunch of mostly black children.
Well, actually, First Lady Michelle Obama delivered a similarly toned message at Bowie State University. And then on, I believe it was Friday, she spoke to the graduating class of Martin Luther King Jr. Magnet High School in Nashville, where every single child is going on to higher education, in other words, a really top-performing school. But, of course, you'd notice nobody's talking about the fact that this president has closed more public schools than any other. But thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Clara from Philadelphia, what did you hear?
Hello, Eugene.
Hello.
Well, what I heard were more lies. just the same old lies without stating the lie. Like mentioned student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mention the fact that the federal government is making billions of dollars off the interest and there's no plan to give any relief to these people. He mentioned educational problems in Chicago. No mention of the number of schools he's been influencing the closing of. He mentioned jobs, as if the graduates will be looking forward to decent jobs, many of which he's imported. He's exported and importing people to fill those jobs at lower costs and no benefits. He talked about what it means to be a man, left out the most important thing in my opinion, honesty and truth.
All right. Well, thank you.
I hope some of those men heard what he didn't express.
Oh, well, we're going to find out right now from Mike from New Jersey.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Clara.
Bye.
Good afternoon. And I have to agree much with what Clara said. But to me, it was just more of this hypocritical doublespeak that he always goes through. When he talked about it being a character flaw, I really can't see it being some sort of character flaw with black men or black people in general in this country.
Thank you.
Not. You know, he had mentioned, he never mentioned how he talked about discrimination and brushed over it lightly. I don't think that he was ever maybe a victim of discrimination, but discrimination plays a great role in not only what he's going through, but what the average black person goes through in this country. You know, every day they get discriminated, and there's no any type of remedy for that. And that blocks us from progress. We don't complain. He's saying, don't complain when you get discriminated against. You know, I don't think that he has a real grasp of the type of power that he has. He could institute jobs, programs, so that the black man can get a job. That way we can stay with our families and support our kids. I mean, that's just one alternative. And he has the power to do this on a unilateral level, and he doesn't.
But he uses this forum, knowing the force that the speech is taped and whatnot, to talk about Obamacare, to talk about the immigration issue. He makes reference to all the issues that he's peddling around the nation in these, the campaign-style project that he's on, propagating all these things that he wants passed. Obamacare, the immigration. The only thing I didn't hear was gun control, but he got the gay rights issue taken care of, equal pay for women, all these things that arrogate to himself, he's saying, these are the great things I have done for you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rita from New Jersey, what did your listening ears hear?
Well, I agree with the Clara and the two other callers, and I think that he was extremely hypocritical, and he talked about courage, but he himself lacks the courage to really do what needs to be done for the average citizen and black or white. And he just is speaking as a member of the establishment, telling everyone to be good and to be courageous, not to be afraid, but at the same time knowing and not admitting that if they do anything really courageous to protest against the establishment and to protest like their high loans that they've had to take out to go to school, he sloughed over that so ridiculously, they'll never pay them back, but the government should be giving them help to reduce those student loans instead of just helping out the bankers. So he doesn't have the courage to do anything that he's telling other people to do. And he's,
thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. There are quite a few very potent things still unaccounted for. Cheryl, would you be the one to give us a couple of those?
Beatrice.
Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm, for the most part, it's just the same speech he gives every time he speaks to black people. It's always about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. You gotta be this and you have to be that, and you know, you have to take responsibility. And what when he speaks to everyone else, all other groups, he'll tell them what it is that he can do to help them. He's never once told black folk what is it that he plans to do to help them. What he does is that he tells them, well, all these things I've already done, they help you. But that's not the message he gives to Latinos. That's not the message he gives to the gay community. That's just the message he gives to us. You know, they always that I'm the president of everybody. You know, well, yeah, we know you're the president of everybody, but you have a unique responsibility to the community in which you claim you come from. You know, I mean, this claim, he says, well, you know, I didn't get these things because I went to Harvard or Yale. And I'm like, well, which part of this life did you have these problems? When you got in Occidental or when you got in the Columbia or when you got in Harvard? I'm confused about when he ran into these roadblocks that he talked about that he may have, he's gotten like the rest of us have may have stumbled onto. I think
he did praise one person for choosing Harvard Law as his next move.
this young man has gone there. His mother did. You know, I understand that the whole pull yourself up routine, but I'm going to tell you, I've been a member of the Nation of Islam. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has always told us that you can't expect someone to do for you what you're not able and capable of doing for yourself. Okay, so that message that he's giving, we all know that message. What people want to hear from him is, what is it that you plan to do? You
exactly.
know, what is it that you plan to, you know, as the president, as the leader of your party, as the leader of the executive branch of government, what is your role in helping and supplying those things to help folk pull themselves up and to be part of this middle class that he likes to talk about all the time?
Oh, you know, I bristled at hearing that phrase. Not only does he praise the middle class, but he is encouraging to climb up to the middle class.
This thing, and it's like this creation of Ronald Reagan of the middle class. When I was a kid, the middle class were people who created wealth, doctors, lawyers, people who owned businesses. Everybody else was pretty much working class or poor. But Ronald Reagan told all these working class white folk, you're middle class, so that they buy into these things when he talks about folks who are against you, people who are getting, taking, and you're paying for it. So he's fooled all these working class people and the thing, and they're middle class, and now Barack Obama continues the same myth of the middle class when the vast majority of Americans are working class, not middle class. That's not,
well,
McDonald's job is not in the middle between being on welfare and being Bill Gates.
Thank you very much, Haral.
Okay.
Thanks so much. You notice he kept saying Morehouse men, and he talks to them like they're little boys. Here's what you've got to do. Don't complain. Work hard. Don't make right choices. Don't go to jail. Don't do this. Don't do that. They're men. He can't bring it to the point of talking man to man with black folks. Allison from New Jersey, what do you have to say? Allison, are you there? All right, we lost Allison. Ryan from Los Angeles. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Yes, can you hear me, Patrice?
I'm hearing you now, yes.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for taking my call. First time
you're
calling in.
Thank you.
I just wanted to highlight some of the things that I noticed. I've noticed in particular, if you pay attention to his tone is completely different. And a few examples of that, it's like his terminology and his tone, it almost sounded like he was trying to appeal to his audience through some type of old school Baptist ideals. And some of the words he used, I noticed things like hustling, grind, brother.
You know, I wrote those down. Would you believe that? I wrote those down, those very words. You're absolutely on point.
Exactly. Now, I couldn't see him going and giving a speech at a Harvard graduate school, at a graduating Harvard class, using that same terminology and with that same accent. It's like he turned into a completely different person while he was addressing these Morehouse graduates.
Yeah,
he
was a homie.
I wouldn't say homie.
He was talking to his homies.
He was a preacher.
Well, he did his best to, and it was not missed at all, because he made about at least three references to it, to bring Martin Luther King's history at Morehouse, to bring himself in touch with Martin Luther King, using Morehouse as a common ground that they share. He mentioned the Nobel Prize, Nobel Prize, of course. Martin Luther King also was a Nobel Prize winner for Morehouse. But one fascinating thing that he did not mention was how extraordinary it was that Martin Luther King would have begun his college career at age 15. So when this president clearly didn't understand or wasn't thoroughly familiar with the history of Morehouse, and so much of his speech was basically preaching to the choir. They all know this history. There's no reason for him to. They all know that Martin Luther King went there. They all know all about Benjamin Mays. They know about that already. So tell us something new, Mr. President. The president actually did say something new, but unfortunately not at Morehouse. Later on, right after the speech, he was at a fundraiser, $32,400 per couple, at the office of the foundation of Arthur Blank, who is the co-founder of Home Depot and owner of the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm sure he didn't go there to, hustle and, get on the hustle. I think he talked there, said, yo, man, what's up? What's your grind? No.
Yeah. But you know what? Even further, I think it perpetuates this notion that because he has the same skin color that I do, that he is somehow for me. And he was heavily pandering to that, almost, just to say, I'm the president. I have the same skin color as you. I believe he mentioned that in his speech as well.
Yes, he did.
He's setting a tone to make it seem like because he's black, he's a black president, he is somehow for the blacks that support him, and all the evidence shows otherwise. So,
exactly the same argument. He is the living embodiment of the argument that he made against, just doing things because, you're black. But
exactly.
He's saying to accept me. You black folks, accept me. You don't need to be, you don't need to be suspicious of me. Just accept me because I'm one of you.
Exactly.
My gosh.
Thank you,
Ryan. Thanks so much. John from Staten Island, are you on?
How you doing, Utrecht?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, I think the propaganda that was propagated by our president is basically he was telling black people, look, I have swagger, I play basketball, but he's no Chavez, he's no Castro. I mean, he is propagating and propagandizing that black people should pull themselves up by their boots and by their bootstrings without boots and without strings. And basically, he is saying that he never said thank you for your vote and thank you for putting me here. He said he's one of us, but if you get down to the true social reality, he hasn't really regulated the banks to get rid of student loan for students. The Cubans are giving out free medical and everything else, are giving out stipends, giving them room and board, and giving them the expertise to pass the USMLE medical exams, and all the acts, tuition free, is to practice in a ghetto. That's real Obamacare. And we haven't heard the president say anything but more propaganda, basically saying that you black folks better be like Gandhi or be like Martin Luther King and don't ask no questions, don't be revolutionaries. And then he's going after Joanne Chesimard and other people, and he's saying don't be a revolutionary, don't question what I do, don't try to do what I do, just pay your taxes and shut up.
Well, thank you. Thank you, John. Is it John? Yes. Thank you, John. What you heard, I just want to put a little closure to this. What you heard was a very clever ploy that the president has been using, and others use it too. He's not really speaking to black people, even though he's in the midst of them. He's speaking to white America about black people. He is speaking a coded language that says, here I am. You can trust me because in public, I'm not hiding. I am wagging my finger at my own. Why? Because they are failing at certain basics. Responsibility and hard work and industriousness and all these other things. They lack ambition. So wherever he can find a public venue where African Americans, as I said, Morehouse men, Morehouse College is a venerated institution that was in operation right after the Civil War, 2 years, as a matter of fact, after the Emancipation Proclamation. That's how important education was to those who were enslaved. That the first opportunity they can find, they could get, they organized a college in the basement of a church. He doesn't appear before this body to truly fellowship with them. He can't. He has a psychological blockage there. But it is a valuable opportunity to again remind white America as to why he can be trusted as a man of color, as a black man. He actually referred to himself today. It was a revelation, maybe even to himself. But the speech, the most important thing about the speech is it wasn't for Morehouse. It wasn't about Morehouse. It was about this president talking to white America through a commencement that should have celebrated the yet another fully educated class of very capable men. It's, by the way, one of only three all-male liberal arts colleges and the only African-American liberal arts college in the United States. He should have been happy to share the news, the good news, that he was bringing wonderful news to Morehouse. He did not do that. He doesn't bring anything to you. He said the gift, he said, prior to what we heard, was that he was giving them the gift of credit, if you wanted, credit for his speech, for listening to his speech. He is going to encourage the school to give the students credit for listening to his speech. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is who we have for president. I know he was very specific when he went to that fundraiser. He didn't tell anybody about what it is they're supposed to do. He was there hustling. He was on the grind. So there you are. It's very good to hear these speeches, because if somebody had written it, you'd say, nah, that's not true. But you heard it. And again, he's doing this on one end, and now Mrs. Obama is doing pretty much the same thing on her end, speaking at Bowie, founded just in 1865, and speaking at one of the few public schools in the nation where children, 100% achievement. This is while her husband is busy shutting down public schools. We'll meet up with each other again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Some great program coming your way. Thank you so much for the pleasure and privilege.